Let's move on. We're talking about the economy in the United States, the history of the American economy. And we're about to get into the worst economic time in American history, the Great Depression. That was a textbook term of yours as well. And by the way, I know I told you it's not necessarily true that the textbook terms I'm bringing up in the lectures are going to be on the exam, but it is more likely. I'm trying to make things as easy on you as possible, and not only reducing the terms, but if I brought up a textbook term in this lecture after the midterm, if I said it's a textbook term, things like that, it is more likely that it will be on the exam. So, you know, do with that what you will. And the Great Depression, you know, no guarantee that these terms will be on the exam. I guarantee you all of them won't, but let's go forward. All the countries of the world really suffered very badly, but the United States, which had been doing quite well after World War I, they had the period called the Roaring Twenties with jazz music and different things like that. Everything seemed to be going great, but as I said, the bigger the boom, the bigger the bust, and America got hit the hardest of all, or one of the hardest hit places of all. So this was pretty devastating. What caused it? What caused this Great Depression? The answer is, we don't know. We have ideas. We have different theories about it, and certainly some things seem to have made it much worse than it otherwise would have been, because not only was it severe, it was very long-lasting. Both those things happened. It was long and it was severe. And what was it that caused this to be so bad? Well, one of the aspects, the most famous aspect, was the Wall Street crash of October 29th, 1929. Black Tuesday, as it was known. The stock market crashed after going up and up and up and up. And part of that was because credit had been extended to so many people. People could, instead of saving up to buy something, the whole country, businesses, banks, everything like that, started extending a whole lot of credit. So, and this was a good thing. This is what we use in modern terms, modern times. You want to buy, stove. You know, you want to buy a stove, well, you'd have to save and save and save until you could buy the whole thing. Imagine today if you guys couldn't buy a car until you had all the money for it. So they said, okay, this is going to happen. And they started doing this with a lot of things. This is after World War I. Times are booming. The economy seems to be booming. And even in things like stocks. Okay, instead of having all the money to pay for it, you can do what's called buying on margin. A margin is a small amount, just like the margin on notebook paper or whatever it is. It's a small amount. A small amount, you put that down. You can do this today. You can buy on margin. You can take extreme risks in the stock market. But back then, it really wasn't regulated at all. I mean, if you guys don't know what a stock market is, essentially, throughout history, you've had these ventures which are way too expensive for just one person to take on by themselves. So they get money from a bunch of other people. I mean, today, you have that Kickstarter thing where you can say, okay, I need money for this. Who wants to invest in the business? And then people give you money, and if the business makes money, they get a portion of it, and they own part of the venture. That's how stocks work. Now, that had been done throughout history with individual ventures, usually a ship traveling a long distance to buy goods or sell goods or trade goods or whatever it is. It's got a lot of risk. It needs expenses. A ship is not cheap. A crew is not cheap. All these types of things. So they would say, okay, this is a voyage. Who wants a piece of it? And they sell this, they sell that, they sell that, until they had enough money, sell enough percentage of the thing, the venture, to make the trip. Well, in the 1600s, they started, it's really the Dutch who first started it. Instead of a single venture, They said, oh, the whole company. Who wants to buy parts of this whole company? And they did that. And when the company made money, people received that money from the their shares in the stock. When it lost money, they didn't receive money, and their shares of stock were worth less. Because when you own this portion of a company, shares of stock, even today, Apple Computers, I use that example, or Airbnb or whatever it is, when the company seems like it's going to do better and better, meaning bring in more and more money, people want to buy your shares. Your shares are going to be worth more because they're going to get more money to whoever owns them. When a company looks like it's doing badly or going to do badly, then the shares are worth a lot less because they're not going to bring you money. They might bring you nothing. The company might go bankrupt. So that's how stock trading really started up. And different companies started doing that here in America. There was the Dutch were here first, and then eventually the British took over. That's why New York, you know, the first people, the first Europeans here, in modern times, not counting the Vikings or anything, were the Dutch. They this is complex. It was actually a Spanish here in Florida and whatnot, but the people in New York, what was New York originally called? The state was called New Netherlands. So New York State was originally called New Netherlands, and New York City was called New Amsterdam. Some of you might know that. And by the way, a lot of these places in New York City, if you've ever been there, are named after Dutch places. Harlem was New Harlem, which is Harlem was a place in the Netherlands. So that's fine, and the Dutch have the place. But eventually, the British come over, and they're really good at taking stuff. There had been a wall built to keep out Native American attackers, pirates, foreign powers, everything like that. And when you have any kind of fortification, like a wall, you need to be able to move your forces easily from one point to another. You can't really defend everywhere on the wall simultaneously at maximum strength. You need to travel to where the attack is happening. And so they built a street right behind this wall, and so they could move their forces back and forth. Now this didn't work. The British just sailed around and attacked from the other side, but eventually that street, which was all along the wall, came to be called Kendall Drive. No, it came to be called Wall Street. I'm just messing with you guys. But what happens is that, so that was Wall Street. And since it's got a road, and since it's got the fence, and I mean the wall, it was a place where a lot of things happened. It was a place where public announcements were made, this, that. And there was a buttonwood tree there. Eventually, people would gather under it. Now, the Dutch are no longer in control, and the British took over, and that's why they named it after the Duke of York. So the Duke who had facilitated this expedition, they named it after his territory, York. So New York and New York City and New York State. So the British are there. And what eventually happened is, under this buttonwood tree, they would just meet. People would meet and trade these stocks back and forth. Who wants to buy? Who wants to sell? And they were concerned about government regulation, because this is pretty wild. Just some people on the street buying and selling. There were scams. There was exaggeration. There were lies, this, that. And the government was ready to step in and crack down. And so they got together and just signed the charter together. Okay, we'll form this this board, the New York Stock Exchange, and we'll formalize it. We won't meet outdoors here. We'll meet indoors. It'll be sealed up. It'll just be us. See, they also wanted to keep it to themselves. There were too many people coming up and getting in on the action. So they sealed it up indoors, just them, just, I believe, 24 of them. And they kind of had a monopoly on this stock exchanging. And they that's partly because only they would only exchange information with each other. This happens a lot in life, in business, everything like that. When so many of you have heard of foreclosures, right? Lots of foreclosures in Miami and everything like that. And they used to put up for auction, and you would go and bid on them. But it's known all around, and I've even known people who tried to do it. They would go in and try and bid, but there was a group in there. They weren't really a group, but they weren't really officially together. But whenever some outsider came in and tried to buy a home cheap, they would bid up the price so they the person couldn't get a cheap home, because they didn't want word to get out, oh, there's these cheap homes here. Those people who were doing it consistently, they wanted to keep all the action for themselves. So, and this happens a lot in a lot of different ways. But anyway, so that's fine. This stock exchanging and everything goes on, and it becomes more and more elaborate and more advanced. And there are different exchanges. There's the NASDAQ, the Dow, whatever it is, and different countries have their own stock exchanges, but that's what it is. Now, as I said, in the 1920s, it became massively, massively speculative. Speculation had gone on before, but it got way, way out of control, especially because people were buying on margin and not just putting down 50% or something like that, maybe putting down 10%. Some small amount, whatever it might be, and then they say they own the stock. Well, what happens when the stock goes down? Then there's what's called margin call. You have to supply more money in order to still hold the stock. Well, you don't have it. If it goes down too much, you don't have it. And essentially, you would lose everything you had. The companies would close down because their stocks would quickly become worthless. I mean, nobody really owned it and things like that. And the loans that were taken out to pay for these stocks, they would not get repaid back. So it was just a catastrophic situation here with this Wall Street crash. But that was only the most prominent aspect of this Great Depression. It's not even the cause of it, although many people attribute it to that. It's people who know about it know that there are many other things going on. Some people say it was wealth inequality that had gotten way, way too extreme. It's not good for an economy when there's too much inequality like that. Some people say it was because of this tariff that was passed. What on earth is a tariff? What happens is, it's actually an Arabic word, tarif. And what it is a tax on imported goods. So a tax on imported goods, TARIFF. Just dropped something here, hang on. Okay, so what it is, if somebody wants to sell in your area, you charge them in your country, let's say, you charge them a certain tax. You have to pay a certain fee. And if you want to sell in their country, they charge you a certain tax. That's what it is. Now, this oftentimes hinders trade because it's not a free market. You have this extra expense, and it's a problem. Especially because other countries, in our country, the banks had lent a lot of money to European entities, countries and businesses and things like that. So during World War I, as I told you, during a war, countries need to borrow a lot of money. Well, who did they borrow from during World War I? Especially they borrowed from America. And so they owe America money. And if their economies don't do well, they can't pay us back. And the tariff hindered their economies and really hindered ours as well. So that's... Now, one thing you learn from history is that people immediately blame the person at the top and hold them responsible. Doesn't matter if they were or they weren't or what's going on. And who was president at that time? Well, who was president was Herbert Hoover, a Republican. And Republicans have an attitude of hands off the economy. That's how it tends to be. Republicans are the party of business, and they want to facilitate business, but essentially it's a laissez-faire attitude. What on earth is that phrase I just used? Laissez-faire. It's a French term, and basically it means hands off the economy. I think it's spelled L-A-Z-Z-I-E, and then another word, F-A-I-R-E, but I'm probably misspelling that. It's a famous phrase, and one you should really know, one that educated people about the economy tend to know. Basically, leave the economy alone. There was this question about, frankly, how does the economy work? You know, what's going on? Why there's no one making it work a certain way? There's no one in charge and dictating what goes where and everything in a free market. How is it that the economy seems to work and, frankly, works so well? Well, a few hundred years ago, a man named Adam Smith wrote a book. The abbreviated title is The Wealth of Nations. The Wealth of Nations. And what happens is, in it, he analyzes what goes on in an economy. How is it that it's able to function so well? And he said there is an invisible hand, not actually the hand of a king or a president or anything like that, an invisible hand and guiding the economy. And that is self-interest. Human self-interest is how the economy works. What happens is that butcher doesn't wake up early in the morning, make sure that his store is clean, his products are fresh and not rotten and infested with insects and everything like that. The display is attractive, the prices are all shown clearly, everything like that. That butcher is not doing it out of the goodness of his heart. That butcher wants to make money. It's in the butcher's interest to actually make things suitable for the customer, as good and as high quality as possible for the customer, and as cheap as possible. That butcher is not charging a reasonable rate because the butcher is a generous person. The butcher is doing it because if it's too high a price, the customer is going to go somewhere else, either to get their meat from some other butcher, or if need be, to get some other product other than meat because it's too expensive. So it is in the butcher's self-interest to do these things. And the customer, when they come up, it's not that they would like to pay that much for the meat. They'd like to pay as little as possible or nothing at all. But they have to pay that because otherwise they won't get that food, that meat. And so this is how the whole economy works. You know, I used to train, it was many years ago, with Rob, the owner of Off the Grill on Kendall Drive, I think it's 125th Avenue, somewhere around there. So Off the Grill, I don't even know if they're still there. It's been a few years, but he's a very impressive individual. He was a Marine. He actually broke his neck and didn't even realize it. Many years later, when he got an x-ray for something, the doctor asked him, "Oh, when did you break your neck?" And he said, "Oh," and then he saw that he had broken his neck. "Oh, that must have been when I fell this time." Very tough guy. One time, the strip mall got robbed. Somebody did an armed robbery there. And when we told him, you know, just got robbed, he just pulled out a handgun, put it on the counter, and went right back to work. When he got out of the Marines, he learned how to be a really good chef, trained with all these greats and everything like that. And he told me, you know, the phone calls with him start at 3:30 in the morning. "Oh, you got a fresh crate of vegetables? Okay, how much is that price? What's going on here? What's going on there?" And really, he's doing these things for a reason. He's doing it because it's in his self-interest. And he would tell me these crazy stories about shoplifting and this and that people would come up with all these elaborate ways to steal his silverware, steal this and that. These people from Lexus of West Kendall, I believe,
they would come in when it was really busy, order their meals, and it was a number system where they'd get these numbers and everything like that. And then they'd keep the numbers without giving them back. Then they'd come in again another day when it was really busy and wave the number around and say, "Hey, where's my steak?" And the cooks would think, "Oh, no, I guess the waiter must have missed it," and just make it for them real quick to scam free food out of him and everything. That's another thing in business. You see nonstop so much shady stuff going on, especially in retail. You see all kinds of things when it comes to shoplifting and everything like that. But anyway, you see, this is how the economy works, with an invisible hand, and government intervention, Republicans tend to believe, will only mess it up. Now, there's certainly a lot of evidence to support that, but there's also evidence to support the opposite. And like so many things, it's usually a healthy medium in between the two extremes, complete government intervention or no government intervention at all. So you had President Hoover. He's following this policy of hands off, let the economy fix itself. Well, it wasn't fixing itself. Because partly you have cycles. You have cycles that go up and down, just as I said, in your own day-to-day lives. You'll have good days and bad, and good luck and bad, and everything like that. Then you'll have structural issues, which actually need to be fixed. Yes, you might be feeling good one day and bad the next, but if you actually have a broken arm or something's wrong with you, that actually has to be fixed. It's not a cyclical thing. So Hoover had this hands-off policy, and the people were really suffering. Really suffering. We all know about homeless people and things like that. But it got to an extreme, extreme situation. Now you see people with, sleeping in cardboard boxes and things like that. But back then you would see, not only that, I mean, firstly, there were huge, huge amounts of them. With made from all kinds of material, where they bits of lumber and tin and roofing material and canvas and every possible thing. Some of them actually got to be pretty elaborate, and there was actually a real estate market for these places. These places are made of cardboard and tar paper and everything like that. These homeless people would buy and sell it amongst themselves, and it was so huge. It actually got to be like cities, like small cities of homeless people, because there were so many out of work and poor and everything like that. And these places came to be called Hoovervilles. So you would call a city a ville, like Louisville or Fayetteville, but they named it after Hoover because they blamed him for it. You see people sleeping on the street covered in newspapers to keep warm. They call these newspapers Hoover blankets. You saw people walking around with their pockets turned inside out to show that they literally had nothing, absolutely nothing. They called those outturned pockets Hoover flags. And here, in an extreme, and this was at a time when there wasn't this unemployment insurance or welfare or things like that. Some people, there's this young couples who are sometimes so desperate, they would cut each other's hair with pocket knives or borrow somebody's knife or whatever it is, wash themselves in the river, scrape down their clothing, get the wrinkles out, everything they could, and make themselves presentable. They'd go into a restaurant and a diner, actually, and the waitress would bring over the menus and some glasses of water. And then they'd say, "Oh, we need a minute to look over the menus." And as soon as the waitress left, what would they do? They would quickly empty out all the salt, pepper, ketchup, mustard, every condiment on the table into their water glasses, shake it up and drink it really quickly, then run off. Why is that? Because that might be all the nutrients they'd get for the entire week. That's it. That's how desperate these people were. And what did they call this? They called it Hoover soup. This poor guy can't catch a break. And out of this environment came gangsters. You see that, what on earth? this is not another problem.
All right. It seems like this might have a problem with the recording, so maybe I need to break it.